From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. I don't know about you, but right now I keep both my shorts and my sweater right next to each other at home because our recent weather has been so extreme. One week it's a heat wave, the next it feels almost as cold as fall. And while it's a bit inconvenient for our personal wardrobe choices, imagine being the region's biggest energy company trying to anticipate power demands on the system. Today on the show, an eWeb spokesperson will join us to talk about just that, as well as programs to both lower the temperature in our homes as well as our bills. Then, at the end of the show, we'll bring back a segment we did a year and a half ago about heat pumps and why they could be a huge energy and cost saver for Oregonians. That's next on Oregon on the Record. Climate change is not just wreaking havoc on the environment, it's wreaking havoc on our energy demands. What was once a fairly mild Pacific Northwest summer has now become a hot and dry season that drives up demand for air conditioning like never before. An anomalous phenomenon like the heat dome of 5 years ago can literally break the system. Today on the show, we check in with eWeb about how they try and anticipate and prepare for peak demand. Aaron Orlowski, spokesperson for eWeb. Aaron, great to see you. Thanks so much for coming in and chatting with us.
Thanks for having me on the show, Michael.
Yeah. Let's start with this. You know, we just went through a bit of a heat wave last week. And how does a heat wave impact eWeb's ability to service the community and the demands on energy?
Well, when temperatures rise, so does energy demand. People with air conditioners, their air conditioners are working harder to keep their homes and businesses cool. And that means that there's a greater demand for energy on the grid. And then, you know, when energy is or when temperatures are really hot, that can also affect some of the electric distribution infrastructure. Those wires start to sag a little bit, and they transmit electricity a little less efficiently. But yeah, especially with those hotter temperatures, temperature is the primary driver of energy demand. So that's what we see when those temperatures go up.
Okay. And I know that you all don't exist in a vacuum. Talk a little bit about prediction. Talk about preparation, and then talk about action planning. When you know summer's coming, you know it's going to be hot. You know, how does it all sort of take us inside the curtain, if you will, on how eWeb prepares for it all?
So eWeb plans our energy supply in the short term, medium term, and immediate or long term. So we'll start with the long term side. On the long term side, we forecast what we think the energy demand is going to be 20 years into the future.
Wow.
And so that means that we're looking at that demand, what kinds of resources we need to procure and contract for and build between now and then. And then sort of more in the immediate medium term, in the next year, month, week or so, we are working to make sure that our power supply is robust. You know, we have people who are trading with utility partners and others to make sure that we have enough power supply. And then that even goes down to the hourly level. Every hour we're participating in what are called wholesale energy markets to make sure that we have enough energy to serve our customers.
Okay. If my memory serves, it sort of used to be in the summertime, the more temperate Pacific Northwest would in some ways send energy to California because it tended to be hotter. Are things changing in that regard?
We do still send a lot of energy to California at certain times of year. And then other times of year, they're sending energy our way. So it really is a two-way flow. But when conditions here in the Northwest are really mild and when there's a lot of water in the rivers, so that's really the springtime. We have a lot of excess hydropower, and some of that does, you know, make its way down to California.
Okay.
And then some of those mild days down in California, but the sun is shining, they might be sending excess solar power our way. Because that's kind of when they might have more excess power. So it is really a two-way flow, just depending on how conditions are and what resources are available.
So just like traffic going north and south on I-5, there's traffic in the lines.
That's right. Yeah, it's a two-way flow.
Okay. So it was 5 years ago when we experienced something incredibly unusual, that heat dome. Talk about how that impacted eWeb.
The heat dome was a memorable moment for all of us. You know, those were record-setting temperatures that lasted for several days on end. And, you know, it wasn't just the fact that it was high temperatures. It was partially the fact that it was right around the summer solstice. So the days were really long. There was just a lot of intense sunshine keeping things hot. And from eWeb's perspective, what we saw was some of our highest demand for the summer that we've really ever seen. So this is going to get a little technical, but demand on the system was a little over 400 megawatts. And that's pretty rare for eWeb, especially in the summer. During the winter time, we might see peak demand reaching up to 500 or 550 megawatts.
Okay.
But with that heat dome, it was around 400. And just that was a harbinger of what's to come. We know that summers are getting hotter, and that's going to be a trend for the decades ahead. And so for us, you know, that was a moment. We knew this type of trend was coming, but it was a stark reminder that we really need to be planning for these hot temperatures, this high energy demand in the future, especially during the summertime.
Yeah. If my memory serves, one of the big issues with the heat dome is it stayed. It didn't move off. So there was a certain lag that created an even worse problem, right?
Yeah. When the temperature is really hot for days on end, buildings don't have time to really cool down. So the heat just stays in there and it stays locked in. And so what you sometimes see during these extended heat waves is that the energy usage, even if the temperatures are relatively flat and hot, the energy use climbs as the more and more energy is used to, you know, cool those buildings down since they're not cooling overnight. So that was a problem there. And then during the heat dome, you know, the temperatures overnight were also really hot too, comparatively speaking. And so that, you know, made the energy use higher.
Yeah, yeah. You're just joining us. We're talking with Aaron Orlowski. He's a spokesperson for eWeb. You know, you mentioned climate change, and obviously things are changing. So maybe if you could, as best you can, so you talked about long-range forecasting, 20 years in advance. I imagine climate change is going to change a lot of that calculus, if you will.
It does, yeah. And so one thing that we did that we're doing with our forecasting is that making sure to account for those higher temperatures when we're predicting what the total energy demand is for our community in the next coming years. You know, we're making sure from a technical perspective to include in the data set those sort of hot temperatures and those hot recent years when we're forecasting future demand, because yeah, we know it will be higher.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned, you know, the megawatt demands. I want to dive into that a little bit because I am wondering, you know, what's more of a challenge for eWeb, accommodating the needs of the community during summer or during winter? Because, you know, another somewhat anomalous event happened not that long ago, that tremendous ice storm. And I'm wondering, you know, I think most of us would assume that a power company, especially in northern latitudes like we are, that winter is going to be the big demand. But maybe I'm wrong about that.
You're actually right. Yeah, winter is the more challenging moment,
okay,
or the more challenging season for us. And, you know, that's partially just because of how much colder it gets, you know, in the winter. If you kind of imagine your house, you want the temperature somewhere between 65 and 80 degrees, something like that.
Okay.
And a heat wave brings the temperature outside to the 90s, maybe 100 degrees, which is, you know, warmer than you want it inside, but not significantly. Whereas with a cold snap, if you're trying to warm your house, and the weather outside, the temperature outside is 20 degrees. That's a big difference to get from 20 all the way up to, you know, 65 degrees in your house. So you can just kind of think about it that way, that, you know, the heating demands are higher, cause more strain on the energy supply, making sure that we can meet that need for heating. And especially as, you know, our community continues to shift to electric heating, that's something that we need to keep up with. That's good for the planet, good mm-hmm. for society, but it is something we need to plan for.
Okay. Are there concerns because we had a really dry winter and obviously hydroelectric is a main source of power? Are there concerns about, you know, that? And I've also heard we could be heading into what's called a super El Nino, and it could be another dry winter for us. Kind of how are you looking at that and looking at demand?
Dry conditions affect our hydropower supply. So especially for the supply that we get from the Bonneville Power Administration, which is a federal agency that mm-hmm. sells energy from dams on the Columbia and Snake Rivers, which I mentioned because that's a slightly different watershed than our local one here on the Mackenzie. But in either case, dry conditions on either that watershed or here locally affect our ability to generate hydropower. And when that's limited, we have to turn to some other resources that could be available. Okay. So that does affect us, and we're really keeping close track of that, those emerging conditions.
From EWIP's perspective, you know, talk about some of those sustainable energy sources like solar and wind and that sort of a thing. I mean, are we seeing a moment where those types of power generation sources are becoming more and more viable, more and more popular, that sort of a thing?
Well, there is nationally, locally, you know, regionally, there is a growing use for wind and solar. You know, especially here in the Northwest, one of some of our main sources of renewable energy, hydropower is the biggest one. Of course,
sure,
we have
sure.
an immense amount of hydropower, and as we just mentioned, that is under strain sometimes when the rain conditions are lessened. But other than that, we also have a lot of wind here. And mm-hmm. the thing with wind is that it is highly variable. Some days the wind blows strongly, and some days it doesn't really blow at all. And so we have to make sure to plan for and account for that. Thankfully, we have that flexible hydropower, which can ramp up and down when the wind is not blowing as much. On the solar front, there's good solar potential. You know, in eastern Oregon and other parts of the Northwest, it tends to be a bit cloudier here
sure.
in the valley. And then, as I mentioned earlier, we're able to import and bring in some solar energy from, you know, the Southwest in California, where they have more sunshine than we do here.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. So we're speaking towards the end of June, almost the end of June. What do you think the next, from your modeling, what do you think the next 3 months is going to be like?
Well, the next 3 months, we're really closely watching the hydropower conditions. Will there be a significant amount of water in the rivers to be able to generate? And that's going to be a big issue for us. Of course, we're looking at the temperatures and how those are panning out. You know, for us, it really, the temperatures are most important when they produce these intense heat waves or intense cold snaps. Sort of just the sort of run-of-the-mill hot temperatures, we can handle those. But when the temperature really rises and we get those heat waves and we get that high peak demand, those are the moments we really have to plan for and be really cognizant about to make sure that we have the right supply for our customers.
Okay. Aaron, you know, as we finish out, I do want to talk about, because a lot of people listening are thinking, what does this mean for me? You know, talk about customer impacts, talk about, you know, what customers can do, both to perhaps cool their homes, but also in terms of the money they're paying for utilities. What are some steps they can take?
Yeah, if you're concerned about your bill or how much you're, you know, able to spend on your energy bill, there's a few things you can do to save some money during hot weather. The first is just to adjust the settings on your thermostat if you have air conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Every degree that you change the setting on your thermostat can sometimes change your bill up to 3%. Of course, it depends on, you know, what your house is like, how drafty it is, all those other factors. But it could change your bill up to 3%. Another thing to do is just make sure your home is well insulated. So that could be actual insulation in the walls and in the floor and everything, but also make sure you don't have air escaping through gaps between the door and the door frame, through windows, things like that. And keep that cold air inside. If you don't have air conditioning, and even if you do, if you open up the windows at night, just cool down the house, mm-hmm. get a couple windows open, have that good cross breeze. You won't need to run the AC as much during the day. And then one other thing that customers can do, we really have an array of programs that customers can take advantage of. So one of the best ones to try and fight those hot, smoky conditions, because wildfire season is coming up too, is to get an electric heat pump. And a heat pump can also cool your home. It functions like air conditioning. And we have an $800 rebate for ductless heat pumps. We have a $1,000 rebate for ducted heat pumps. Figure out which one's best for your home. And then we also have some other tools. We have rebates for smart thermostats. One of the models you can get is actually free. So you could get a smart thermostat, and that the thermostat sort of learns your energy practices and can actually save you money by just adjusting the settings a little bit. It's not connected to eWeb systems right now or anything like that. It just, you know, figures out what the settings are in your house and how to optimize those. And then one other thing I'll mention is, you know, going back to that insulation, if you're trying to get an insulation project and make sure your house is not losing cool air or losing hot air during the winter months, we actually have a $1 per square foot rebate for that. So look into all those options and, you know, work on some of the things you can do at home to save your energy.
And all those programs you just talked about, people could learn more going to the eWeb website. Is that correct?
Yes. You can go to eweb.org/saveenergy to learn more about those programs.
Sounds great. Sounds great. Well, here's hoping we don't have another heat dome. He's Aaron Orlowski. He's spokesperson for eWeb. Aaron, always great to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Thanks again for having me on the show, Michael.
Now let's revisit the issue of heat pumps in a previous segment from a year ago that's no less salient today. Duard Headley, the Energy Incentives Manager for the Oregon Department of Energy, thanks so much for coming on and chatting with us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Gosh, let's just start with the very basics here. What is the Oregon Department of Energy's heat pump purchase program? What does it do?
The heat pump purchase program is the latest incentive program that the Oregon Department of Energy has to incentivize the installation of heat pumps in residential buildings.
Okay. And, you know, I know a lot of people have heard the term heat pump, but could you help us kind of understand what is a heat pump and what's so great about them?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Heat pumps were actually invented in the 1850s. But a heat pump is a device that effectively takes heat or cool from the outside air and transfers it indoors in a very efficient way.
Okay, so it's more energy efficient than, say, traditional air conditioning, traditional furnaces, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's heat pumps are especially more efficient than like resistance heat, like baseboard heat, or the wall heaters that are typically installed in homes in Oregon. And I think the other important aspect is that it combines both heating and cooling. And a lot of homes, when they were originally built in Oregon, didn't include the cooling because of our lovely climate.
Sure, exactly, exactly. So I'm wondering, too, you know, as I understand it, this is part of a larger program. I believe it's called the Climate Equity and Resilience Through Action Program. Could you give our audience an understanding of what that program is?
Yeah, that's a much larger program that includes programs like this in state departments like the Transportation Department and HCS. They're all individual programs that have the goal of reducing greenhouse gas emissions or climate pollution throughout the state. The heat pump purchase program, like the other heat pump incentive programs that the Department of Energy has, are contractor-centric. We develop a group of approved contractors primarily for consumer protection reasons. And those approved contractors claim the incentives, apply for and claim the incentives on behalf of homeowners or rental property owners. And the way it works is that the homeowner finds a contractor. We have an approved contractor list on our website. They select one or more of the approved contractors. The contractor does the installation of the heat pump on their home and applies for the incentive once the heat pump is installed on their behalf. And the homeowner or rental property owner actually doesn't pay that incentive. The approved contractor actually takes it off of their total and they receive the grant. And this way, it lowers the overall costs upfront for homeowners or rental property owners.
Okay. Getting back to heat pumps in general, and with whatever numbers you're comfortable utilizing, you know, comparing what perhaps a homeowner might currently have in their home, what kind of either savings, monetary savings, or energy savings might someone see with a heat pump versus more traditional HVAC options?
Sure. Well, heat pumps are more energy efficient than other heating and cooling equipment. Cost savings will vary depending upon the specifics of the home and the previous heating type. According to Rewiring America, the average household in the United States will save $370 per year by switching to a heat pump. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to note that heat pumps provide a lot of other benefits than just energy savings, including potentially life-saving heating and cooling during extreme heat events. And they also improve indoor air quality, which can be important in the upcoming wildfire season.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, I know that some money is coming from, I believe it's the state, but then also there's a lot of federal money in programs like this. And I guess, you know, again, however you're comfortable talking about it, are you concerned with potential federal cuts either happening right now or maybe coming in the near future?
Yeah, the heat pump purchase program is funded through a climate pollution reduction grant through the US EPA. And that grant is obligated to the state of Oregon. We're actively monitoring what's happening at the federal funding level. Certainly not easy to predict, but at this time, the funds are available and we're proceeding with the program.
Great. So do you have sort of ultimate goals for this program in terms of how many units you want to see installed, how many people utilizing it, kind of what is your sort of vision for this program?
Sure. Yeah, the heat pump purchase program is funded for 12,000 incentives. And so that translates into 12,000 heat pumps installed through the state of Oregon and $24 million of cost savings for Oregonians. And personally, that's my goal, is to see these 12,000 heat pumps installed and for the Department of Energy to be able to deliver those $24 million in cost savings for Oregonians.
Okay. Dewart, you know, if a property owner wants to avail themselves of this program, what should they do?
Yeah, anybody who wants to participate in the program can go to the Oregon Department of Energy website and identify an approved contractor and contact that contractor and get a quote. We recommend actually getting more than one quote and selecting the contractor that's right for you. The contractor will then install the heat pump and apply for the incentive on your behalf, and they will take that incentive off the top of your bill, so you actually will have reduced costs up front.
Indeed it is. Indeed it is. Dewart Headley with the Oregon Department of Energy, thank you so much for spending some minutes with us to talk about this program.
Thank you. I'm always glad to talk with you.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Tomorrow on the show, we check in with our OPB colleague about the recent ruling by the Supreme Court on mail-in voting and how it protects something beloved in Oregon. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.